Episode number 216 of the Tartan Running Shorts podcast, hosted by Tom Bryan, Lewis Walker, and myself, Kyle Gregg. So, lads, the three musketeers are back again, eh? And they're both, well, Tommy's stuffing his face with God knows what. Lewis has been just chatting about having turmeric for dinner and breakfast and lunch, no doubt, although I missed half of what he said. And I've just stuffed myself with curry and tiffin for dinner. So it's and Tommy's just whipping out a wee brew dog there as well. And do you know what? I've come empty handed here. I've only got some active root diluting juice. What's Lewis got as a tipple?
A cup of tea. Very, very healthy. And it was a flapjack I was having earlier, guys. A flapjack.
Nice, very nice.
Is it turmeric in that tea as well?
I'm going to turmeric you, pal, in a minute.
So tell us why you're having it. Tell us why and what's the reasoning behind it for the listeners. Although, did you not mention it's been helping you?
Yeah, well, you know what? When you get to my age, Kyle, you got to try everything to stop these aches and pains. Oh. So... So turmeric's a food supplement, right? And when you look at it in terms of research, it's got some significant anti-inflammatory properties, but without the kind of risks of stuff like ibuprofen or other anti-inflammatories that are not terribly good for you. But as a food supplement, it's pretty safe, and if it helps your aches and pains, why not? So I'm giving it a wee try.
Why not? Well, let's not get into the nitty-gritty science behind it, because that's certainly not what we're here to do today. Before we've got another, as always, exciting episode, as always. Hopefully not too long, but long enough that it's worthy of a run outside, I'm sure. But Tommy, we haven't heard from you for a while. He's got his Team Langland tracksuit on. I don't know if he's still a member of Metro or whatnot, if he's fallen out with the squad, or if he's a second player, who knows?
I'm an honorary lifetime member, so they're going to have to do more. Me wearing a Langland vest is going to have to warn that to get out. I'm well. So, yeah, the last two episodes I've not been on, and the one before that you weren't being on. So this is it must be about 6 weeks since we've had an episode together.
It has. Yeah. I don't know what to do and where to start.
What's happened since then? You've been to Tallahassee. I've run the National Cross. And you know what my latest news I'll fill you both in on is? I'm throwing the towel in for London. It's not happening. So I'm not going to London. I'm not going to reel out all the excuses, but it's just it's not happening. And do you know what? It's not an injury. It's just life.
Do you know what, Tommy?
I can't balance it.
Do you know what? It's not often I go on Strava, but I thought right to do a bit of research before the podcast. Yeah. I'll check everyone.
I know what's coming. I know what's coming.
And I was like, Tommy's mileage has gone down the last couple of weeks. What's up with this? Like,
what's happened? Like, joking aside, 50-hour weeks and twins and they're at an age now. I think the big thing is I've realized this last. We've been away a lot as well. I think we're 10 weeks into the year, and five of those weeks, one of us has been away with work. And yeah, it's just like about 3 weeks ago, we had I was just like, this is. It's not happening. I got to the weekend. I'd missed 2 days during the week because I was traveling to Oslo one on the Tuesday, traveling back on the Friday early, and then got back and dealing with the kids. And then I thought to myself, it's just not happening. And I'm not going to bury myself. So anyway, I'm doing a half this weekend, the Wilmslow half. I'm not in bad shape. So I'm going to run. I just need to work at what I'm doing with my running these days, because it's just... work is at a pretty stressful point, which I'm enjoying, but the marathon, you can't fake it, and I don't want to fake it, so there we go.
Well, dearie me.
So you'll be the only rep. You'll be the only rep. But I mean, that sounds like a real sob story. I actually feel very relieved to have done it, and I'm starting to enjoy going out for a run again, because it's not like I'm not fitting it in. I'm actually running, going to enjoy it. So. We'll see. I'm sure I'll be back at it. But I'm looking forward to just following you through London, Kyle. That will be exciting.
Well it's excuses aside, I'll certainly be there. I'm not sure what type of shape I'll be in. Although I'll say the last 2 weeks it's been similar to you, Tommy. Just work, scarlet fever. The kids have just had scarlet fever the last week. Lenny's sleeping up in her bed just now. Put him down. Oh, he decides he's coughing. So the last week I've ran once and I've cycled once. Oh, my wow. First cycle of the year, though. That it's going in. I mean, the flights are booked, the entries are booked, but I'm just gonna go and just
see. That was the other kicker for me. I hadn't booked flights or accommodation yet, and that was where that was interesting, because then I was like, do I really want to shell out the crux of 500 quid, you know, at a time when anyway, yeah. So we'll fight. I will do something in the summer. I will do. Yeah, I'm not done yet, but yeah, it's not for London.
We'll call it the Winslow boy returns then, eh?
Exactly, yeah, exactly. But the thing is, you know, I actually had, we're gonna have to jump in a minute and introduce our guest, but I really enjoyed the National Cross. I was, you know, I thought I was on a trajectory upwards at the time, so I felt like it was kind of where I expected to be, and off the back of that weekend, I thought, you know, I can just need to get a few more long runs, keep it building up, and a couple of long runs where it just wasn't happening. But I was like, it's okay. And then just two disaster weeks and it just, yeah, it's just gone. And I thought, you know, I'm not, my head, you know, something you said before, Lewis, a while ago, when we're talking about goals, like there's nothing getting you out of bed, do you know what I mean? And that was what I was realizing, that on a Sunday morning, you know, I wasn't seeing the kids through the week, Saturday, Sunday morning, they're at quite a fun age. I was just not that fussed about going out to go out for the big run. So I figure I'll back it off a wee bit. I can still front load my week, do more running through the week, but not with the pressure of getting 2.5 hours on the weekend. So, yeah. But we'll be back. We'll be back. We'll find something. Maybe, Kyle, maybe I'll do a hill race with you in the summer.
Oh, look at that, eh? Sounds exciting.
Oh, I know. Yeah, you know, we're going to have to hold you to that then.
Well, I mean...
So not only will we have to hold you to it, we'll have to get you to commit to the travel and the accommodation. Because that's the only way we're going to get you to go, get on the run, isn't it?
Absolutely. Well, joking aside, I'm telling you, if I'd booked the travel and accommodation in January, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't be in this position.
Do you know what? I'm not expecting to do anything at London. I'm just going to enjoy it. It's not even worth chatting about my training just now. It's just really non-existent, and I'm not sandbagging. I'm just stating fact. Like it's not happening. I'm committed to going. I'll run it. I'll enjoy it. Debbie's in the same position as me. We're just going to have fun with it. It's just been just carnage like the last few weeks, and you know, let's get the small violins out, folks. But there's more to it, you know. It's not just about performance these days for me. It's about just getting out and running. And the cycle I did yesterday was one of the best sessions I've done in a while. I just got out in Debbie's old racing bike, and it was a lovely evening. And just ran around, just cycled around some of the countryside places, and it was just stunning, like, you know. And I felt I actually worked hard in it, because when you haven't cycled or done an activity for such a long time, something that you're not used to, my quads were burning. So this morning I was like, oh, they were like numb, you know, you get the tingling sensation in your legs and your feet. That's what happened to me last night. So it's good. It was great to, you know, I was like, oh god, this. And then I've had these like niggles in my calves and stuff, so it's beer, blah 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 blah. But anyway, we have got somebody who, when something goes wrong, you need that person to help you. Not only Coach Lewis is someone like that, but we have Kenny. Kenny's surname list is completely
Kenny Watt.
Kenny Watt is going to be coming on the show. So Lewis, why don't you tee Kenny Watt?
Okay. So Kenny Watt, in my view, in my humble opinion, Kenny Watt is probably one of the best, if not best, physios in Scotland and maybe even in the UK. Amy. He's a guy whose knowledge is second to none. He's been with Commonwealth Games teams. He's kind of multi-sports physio. I mean, we'll get him to give us a wee bit of his background when he does come on. He's got a practice kind of based in Edinburgh. And I've had a number of my athletes over the past 3 or 4 years have seen him, got great advice. He's been great with me in terms of just keeping me in the loop. And the rehab programs, you know, they all just kind of fit together with getting my athletes back on track and performing at the highest level. So he understands high performance athletics. He understands strength training. And you know, I was really keen to get him on the show to speak to a number of things, and there's lots of things Kenny can speak to because he's got wide experience. But we're particularly going to look tonight, I think, to, you know, what are the common issues around endurance athletes and the kind of things he sees with kind of longer distance runners, and what to do about it. Common injuries. What do we do? How do we prevent them? How do we treat them? If they come up. So probably without further ado, I see that he is in the waiting room.
He's been waiting there for a while, let's say.
Well, he did say he was coming about 8 o'clock, so we're just about 8 o'clock just now. So I'm sure we can get him in and get started.
Let's get him in. Here's Kenny Watt.
Hey, Kenny, how are you?
Hi, guys.
Hello, Kenny.
Can you hear us?
Hello, Kenny.
I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you fine. So you clearly, are you just finishing off your flapjack as well? I had a flapjack kind of 5 minutes before I came on. But
is this the standard Tartan Running Shorts pre-event snack, is it?
Well, it's not maybe the pre-event snack, but there's a pre-event load of nonsense goes on, and it's already gone on. So you're gonna have to listen back to the start, Kenny, because I've just given you a phenomenal kind of write up. So not that you have to live up to it, but
this wasn't done with like a mouthful of flapjack, though, was it? some sort of introduction, no?
Payment will be in the post.
So I don't know if you've met Kyle and Tom.
No, I've not.
Lovely to meet you, Kenny.
They basically run the podcast for, 5 years now, guys?
It's about five years now.
I'm a Johnny come lately to this. So.
what were we, 216 episodes. So.
We were drying up, so we brought this.
That's amazing.
I don't know. I mean, it's a quantity over quality approach we seem to be going for. But thank goodness you're here, Kenny, because I feel like we're going to really up that quality tonight from the beautiful introduction that Lewis has given you.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Kenny, I mean, I did give you a bit of an introduction, but I think it would be useful just to hear from yourself just a wee bit about your history, just a potted history of how you got into physio, what kind of stuff that you've been doing, what kind of athletes and teams you've been working with. You've been to the Commonwealth Games, you've been at kind of all sorts of stuff. Just give us a wee potted history of that, where you're based at in Edinburgh.
Yeah, so in essence, I graduated, well, my first degree was in sports therapy out of University of North London back in 2009. So it feels like a long time ago. So 2009, and then I completed my degree and then came back up to Scotland, went and worked in professional football for 2 years, then decided that I was going to go back and do my undergraduate in physiotherapy. And then from there, that took me down to University of Teesside, where I did my undergraduate. And then coming out of my undergraduate, I applied for a role at the World University Games. And back in the day in World University Games, they used to take a student physio or two student physios to try and give them experience of major multi-sport games. And so I applied for that and was lucky enough to got selected to go to the games in Belgrade in 2009. And then when in Belgrade, getting exposure to sort of multi-sport games, I met my current co-director of the clinic I'm in now, Stephen, who was out there with Team GBR as well. And then there he offered me a job on returning after going and doing my two years in NHS. 2 years in NHS flew by, and then I went to go and work for him in Space Clinics, which was in Dalright Road here in Edinburgh. And then did that for 9 years, and then unfortunately COVID shut that clinic down, and then took about roughly 9 months off. We had our second child, okay. And then sort of took 9 months off, did some webinars, did some bits and pieces about CPD, but generally took a bit of time off, and then started the new clinic I'm in now. And so then established that in the end, the start of, I've lost track of time now again, so whatever that was, end of 2020 2021. So the clinic is now, what's that make us, 3 years, three and a bit years old now in this new business. And so Stephen and I decided after Space shut that we'd set up the clinic, a new clinic together. I toyed with going back into sports. I toyed with, did I want to go and work for somebody else? But I actually thought I wanted to go and build something of my own and build something in the way I wanted a clinic to look and run like a clinic. I thought a clinic could work well and offer what at the time we thought would probably be quite unique or different to what was available out there within sort of private sector. And then I did most of the donkey work. Stephen is currently, so Stephen's just won the Six Nations with Irish rugby. So he's elite physio Irish rugby. So he's currently based full time in Dublin. And so then sort of provides the clinic with a sort of performance input. He does a lot of consultancy work for the clinic. He sort of leads up our performance department. We've had some papers published in BGSM via him. And then he does some online clinic work sporadically as well for us. But he mostly serves as a really great resource with huge amounts of experience, numerous World Cups for Scotland rugby, World Cups now with Ireland and the Six Nations with Ireland as well. He was a head physio for a couple of Commonwealth Games. He's done a huge amount of lead physios for World University Games as well. So him and I work quite nicely together and sort of have a nice sort of clinical as well as, you know, good relationship on that basis too. And so the clinic's now been going, we're 3 years old, which has been a learning curve. I never wanted to be my own boss. Never wanted to have to know about accounts, never wanted to know how to set up marketing, all these sort of things. So that's sort of where we stand now with the clinic.
So you're pretty well kind of stabilised and based in Edinburgh. And if anyone wants to try and get an appointment, my understanding is it's bloody difficult, you know, because you keep on putting out these tweets saying, hey, we've only got one appointment left for this week or next week. So clearly very busy.
We're lucky. I mean, having 9 years worth of patients from the old clinic, it made starting a new business, while intimidating, not necessarily horrendous, because I had a feeling that a number of patients would carry over with us. We are very lucky. The clinic sits in quite a nice niche in that we see the general public without a doubt, and then we also that patient group will run right through from recreational athletes right through to full-time international level athletes. So today would be a nice prime example of first patient as an internationally 100-meter runner. That was then followed by a Scottish ultra runner. That was then followed by a hip replacement. That was then followed by the last patient today was Scottish triple jumper. So it's a nice, lovely variety. And part of that is probably served because of my sports work, and both Stephen and I's sports work separate to what we've done within the clinic. So in 2014, I was a lead physio for athletics at Glasgow, and then from Glasgow then on to Gold Coast in 2018 with Team Scotland for Commonwealth Games, and then followed that up with Birmingham in 2022, and then after 2009 with World University Games, I then was back doing that in 2013 in Kazan, then 2015 in Guangzhou. And then 2017, I was deputy head physio for Taipei. And then in 2020, I was made head physio for China, but then we never went. So with COVID and all the things that happened with COVID, we never got to China. No matter how many times we tried, we had about three goes at it and never, you know, the games kept getting pushed back and pushed back. Yeah. And then just in the last 4 weeks, I think it was, I got appointed to be head physio again for Team GBR for World University Games for Germany next year. So I'll be heading off to lead up a physio team for what is, in essence, the second, because World University Games is, I think, the second biggest multi-sport games in the world. So just behind the Olympics.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah, it's huge.
They dwarf Commonwealth Games. They dwarf pretty much most games outside the Olympics.
That's cool.
So we'll take probably hopefully quite a big delegation to that. So leading up that physio team will be a challenge, put it that way. Not a challenge, it's China.
Yeah. Well, you've clearly got a busy, a busy practice. You're a busy guy, and you know, for me, kind of managing my own business as well, I understand all the different elements of that too. It's incredibly challenging, and you know, I think some folks forget about all the other things you've got to do when they see outside in. One thing I'm interested in is, and you kind of mentioned it just in our pre kind of chat we had on email, is just like you clearly got a diverse group of people that you work with. And that's probably relevant to the listeners who are listening at the moment, no doubt. You know, some of them are probably just starting off running, they're club runners, they're, some of them are even elite runners. So, you know, probably quite generic, some of the things we'll chat about, but I think there'll be some take homes from what you're saying and just some of the things that you've mentioned. But if someone, you know, just if someone was to come in just to your practice, for example, just someone says, look, there's something, maybe not, they haven't got an injury, they just want a kind of MOT, for example. What are the things that you're looking for? You know, what are the, you know, as a runner who perhaps their goal is to get faster, they want to get a 10K PB for maybe a sub 40. What are you kind of looking at if you were to come in and see them?
Yeah, I think we talk an awful lot in medicine about meeting the patient where they are. So we have this discussion with patients about, like, we can do all the bells and whistles things if we really feel we need to do the bells and whistles things and all that, you know, do all this other very clever testing. But at the end of the day, it really is, what's brought them in and what is their goals? What are their desires? Like, is it that they just want to run their first ever 5K? Is it they just want advice on how maybe not to get injured or so on and so forth? So part of it is almost a little bit of reverse engineering things. What's the goal at the moment? And then how do we work our way back from that? So where do we find you at this particular point? And that can sometimes simply look like a 45-minute chat. It may, we don't do anything physical with them. We simply just give them reassurance that they're safe to go and do it, that go and do it, go and give it a go, because we'd rather, as physios, encourage people to go and be active and go and do something than put the fear of God in them and say, well, you have to do these 25 exercises if you've got any chance of, you know, getting to the end of your street safely without pulling a calf. So very often it comes down to simply working out, what is it you'd like to do and how can I facilitate that for you? And part of it comes down to working together and building up this good relationship. And I think relationships are key in any sort of working partnership, whether it's physio to athlete, whether it's coach to physio, whether it's anybody else as well. You just want to have them, what you're telling them is honest advice, it's good advice, it's trustworthy advice, and that you will sort of go with them on that journey, whether that's one session, whether it's five sessions, or with some of the athletes I've now had under my belt for 10 years worth, where you just start to get this idea of, like, who they are as a person, what drives them, and then how can I sort of facilitate those things for them. And I think that's hugely important when we actually start to think about why they might get injured down the road. Because if I get a good grasp of what, you know, if you, so you, Kyle, say, like, oh, I've got a job, I've got these other things, I may have, you know, families and kids. If I know that about you and you and I get that out in conversation, if you start to get, you know, run out of energy, if you're starting to hit walls in training, if you're starting to pick up injuries, it may have nothing to do with what the running you're doing. It might be where we have that conversation of, oh, you know, how's things in the house, like, how's what's going on there? And actually, that's what's putting the demand on you. And that's why you're having those challenges a little bit too. So as much as we can do all sorts of clever assessments, sometimes actually the best part of it is just getting to know people and getting to know the runner, getting to know what they like, where they are with their career just now, or what they hope to get out of running generally across the board as well. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's really, I like that kind of thought of meeting the patient where they're at, because I think, you know, regardless of what kind of professional you are, you know, having a therapeutic relationship is probably one of the keys. And you and I have spoken a bit before about things like placebo effects, which are very useful effects and should be brought into every aspect of therapeutics, in my view. But that's partly because, you know, you get a relationship, you get that trust, and you can both move forward with that. What I think, you know, what we get on Tartan Running Shorts is, you know, our listeners, a lot of our listeners are into kind of ultra running, or they like to either hear about ultra running or they do a bit of ultra running. And so one of the roads we kind of wanted to go down a wee bit was really about, you know, what kind of injuries you are seeing. You know, when you do see somebody with an injury, who's training for something like a long distance race or an ultra, what kind of things are you seeing, and what kind of assessment do you kind of start with?
I think when we get into sort of certainly in the endurance field, what we're going to see an awful lot in the endurance field is these sort of cumulative effect type injuries.
Yeah.
Where more often than not, unless you got unfortunate and you go over a curb or fall off a stone and break an ankle, and then it doesn't take a genius, it doesn't take me to tell you what you've injured or what you've just done. But generally, most of these injuries are going to be cumulative effect injuries. So more often than not, someone will come in and say, well, this run, just yesterday I got this shin pain or I got this knee pain, and nothing was different about that run. But the truth is, we're probably going to want to go back and look 4, 6, 8, 10 weeks in the past and get a grasp of, okay, what has your training looked like? Where have you come from to where you are now generally? And that's where we would sort of, we're not saying people have to have diaries, but it is very useful for runners to actually be able to diary, whether or not, if they're not coached or they're not coached, is some sort of way of actually tracking what they're doing training wise and what that training looks like generally, how fast was it, what sessions were you doing? Because runners, especially ultra runners, all runners generally are terrible reporters, like generally across the board, you know. And even I'll have runners, I had one yesterday, one on Friday, where I say, let me have a look at your Strava, and you can almost, they see them go, I'd rather not, I'd rather you didn't look at the Strava. And I'm like,
You don't want to look at Tom Bryan's Strava this last couple of weeks, that's for sure.
How dare you? My Strava's been very sensible the last couple of weeks. It's very, very sensible.
And these are great tools. And there's been some lovely studies looking at these tools, you know, and saying actually how useful are they. And some really lovely study just not long out about recreational runners, where they tried to work out why the recreational runners get injured. So my first piece of advice, or first thing we would do with someone is genuinely get an idea of where have they been the last 6, 8, 10 weeks? And then maybe what are their injury histories? So we can work out, okay, well, you've had this before, and 6 weeks ago, you started to add a second, third, fourth session in, or we started to add some speed in, or I've started to put some hills in somewhere along the way, or it simply is just a distance issue. So with a Strava, again, without the ability to go back and say, well, I did 40 that week, and you go and look at it, goes, well, it says you did 43, and they go, oh, well, I felt a bit 40, or I did a wee quick extra 3 there. And you're just looking to try and almost detect it and go back and have a wee nosy to see what they do. And so runners of any level will always be well served by having some way of going back and looking again. Because it makes my job much easier, but it also lets them go back and reflect on where did I maybe make a mistake? What did I do last season that went wrong? And this is maybe why I get this sort of problem show up again a lot of times. Very often in terms of the type of injuries we'll see, we tend to see a lot of sort of volume-based injuries in the ultramarathon group. So we'll see a lot of calf-based injuries. We'll see a lot of patellofemoral pain, so kneecap pain. We'll see a lot of sort of ITB pain. And we'll see that especially in those hill runners, those trail runner type groups as well. And those that are maybe looking to push speed a little bit, we might see a little bit more of Achilles type pain. We might see a little bit more sort of plantar fascia type pain. So we'll see sort of varying injuries depending on maybe the type of training they're doing or what the block currently looks like a little bit too. Why we see some of that depends on flight time, step rate, so on and so forth. Again, you can get into the weeds a little bit with this too. And then sometimes just looking at the face in front of you, you know, is it a young runner? Is it an older runner? You know, older runners will tend to pick up a bit more calf injuries, a bit more Achilles injuries, some plantar fascia injuries. And I think you and Rory, when Rory was last on last time, you talked a little bit about, you know, why do we see those? Well, we might see loss of calf strength. We might see this huge loss of tendon stiffness in older runners. So again, we might see those injuries start to show up in that group, and especially that group who now I tend to see population-wise, which is this slightly older athlete getting into ultra running. Because I see the younger groups and I see some of the Scottish internationals who are that younger, but my instinct from the population is that this is into the late 30s, 40s, 50s, where I'm seeing this huge explosion in ultra running. And in that group, we just see this huge amount of Achilles, gastroc type problems off the back of that too. So that would be sort of where we see it. But in terms of numbers, I mean, there's some papers that go out and quote some like 49% of runners are injured or running with some sort of injury in the back, in the background, which is a frightening number on any sort of health metric if half the people doing it are injured.
I think you make a really good point, Kenny, which is that we often get very enthusiastic as runners. We boot up our mileage, or we say we're going to do two threshold sessions a week for the next 6 weeks, plus our long run and a build up to a particular race. And it's that 6 weeks' time that's the problem. And it's, as you say, it's nothing that's terribly acute that's happened. It's that accumulation, because we've just done a bit too much too. And it feels great the first 2 or 3 weeks. You feel like you're flying. And then it kind of gradually accrues. So that's number one. I think that's really important. The second thing I think you're absolutely spot on about, because the research shows that once you hit 40, you start to lose 1% of muscle mass per annum. So it's 10% in a decade. That's a lot of muscle mass, which can be completely curtailed if you're doing some strength training. So one of the things that we probably will speak to, maybe not just now, but as we go on, is around how to seed that continual strength training. It's not just rehab, it's the prehab bit of strength training, set strength training in. So
we also see, just on that note, I mean, that Masters runner, like, we also see a change in form. And I think that's very underappreciated, that
okay,
Masters runners will go and start to move into these sort of slightly shorter step rates very often. So we'll see this higher cumulative force effect. We'll also see them sometimes shift forces into their hip a lot more as well. So again, we'll see, and again, if we look at the sort of female population in that Masters runner, I'll see a lot of hip problems in that female Masters runner, largely because they start to shift that demand higher up the chain. They just find it energetically easier for them as well. Okay. So again, we very often would say to those female Masters runners, we want to work on calves, but we also really want to think about, can we build some hip capacity? You know, again, you spoke about Rory this last time, is that there are going to be certain injuries that are going to show up in that female Masters group, especially if we get into sort of perimenopause and menopausal area. So we will see that real shift in injury rates and where we get them to. And so it's again, meeting the patient where they are. Like, what is this? What age is that Masters runner? What age is that ultra runner? What sex is that ultra runner? And then being able to pick our sort of our bullet of choice as such to try and sort of solve this problem, or where we're going to aim those targeted interventions.
Yeah, I think that what some people often don't fully understand, and that included me in the early days, was around how long it actually takes to get better. You know, once you've got a problem, it's not a question of you know. A week or two's physio, the laying on of hands, or the old ultrasound. You know, let's give the therapeutic ultrasound in here, and then you're better. But it can actually take, if you've got an Achilles tendinopathy, or a patellofemoral pain, or you've got a gluteal tendinopathy, there's actually quite a time frame for these things to resolve, isn't there?
There is, and I think that's where the trick is being honest with patients, because if you're not honest with patients and how long it may be, they'll go away frustrated, and they'll go away and they'll go and they'll try and run on top of things or keep pushing through things. So my instinct is very often is that you're better being honest with people straight off the bat that this may be a number of weeks. Doesn't mean it won't be a number of weeks till you can run again, but it might be that we are going to have to work on this to get this right. So if we consider that some Achilles tendons, It depends on what the tissue is. So the way I tend to try and explain it to patients is thinking about how quick has a tissue got a chance to turn itself over and get itself healed. So if we look at a muscle, we might say, well, we know muscle's full of blood. We know that actually it's got a really high amount of cell count, high amount of nerves in it. So its healing potential is quite quick if we get this right. So if we look after it well, we might turn that injury around in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, maybe 6 weeks for one of some of the bigger ones. If we look at something like bone, again, not great blood supply. Cells do turn themselves over reasonably quickly, but we are going to be pushing everything now down the week into 8, 12, 16 weeks, 24 weeks potentially. Tendons have almost next to no blood supply, or very poor blood supply. Metabolically, they're pretty inactive generally as a tissue. So again, their healing potential then is going to take a little bit longer. So if you're going to have that nice conversation with patients or the runners, you're going to say to the runner, look, I'm going to try and work out what I can keep you doing. because you're an athlete. You want to keep moving. That's what you do. That's how you function as an individual. That's where you find your happy place. That's how, you know, you get on with life, is by continuing to exercise in some form. So what can I keep you doing so you don't get frustrated? What can we now give you to do exercise wise? But then be honest at the time scale of, well, this is how long it's probably going to take. But I think also key, and one of the things we like to do here, is test them. Give them a test. Show them what they can do. Because then I can go back and retest that. And then they can see for themselves, oh, that is better. Like, that is, I feel better. I can see that. So that even in the face of maybe not being able to go and run, they can see they're making objective improvements off the back of that. And so it is giving things time to get better, but people only give it time if they understand why they're giving it time. Mm-hmm. If they don't have a good understanding of what the process should look like, what the steps we're going to take is, then you get that therapeutic alliance. You're in it together. You and I will go through this journey together, but we'll test you every step of the way, and that will give us good signs that you're ready to run. And as soon as I can get you doing something, I'll get you doing something. And you and I have spoken about this before, Lewis, where it's like, oh, I can't run, that's it. I was like, no, but let's get on the bike. I've got a 24-hour runner just now who's a highly experienced 24-hour runner who'd never really been on a bike in their days. And actually the discussion with them was, we have to give this tendon time to heal, but let's get you on the bike. Let's see if we can start to enjoy being on the bike. Because actually, if we look further down the line, we know that you're not going to be able to take that ground impact force for much more longer in the career, the amount that you want to do. So we get you enjoying the bike now, and we make that your goal, and we make that your gain, then that not only solves our problem now and keeps your aerobic fitness and your metabolic work up, but actually we're bulletproofing you for 2-3 years' time when you're aware that I just can't do 5-6 sessions a week anymore as well. So it's making that awareness of time scale to get better, but it's what can we improve on while we're getting better? Like, what can I test? What can I strengthen? What can I make better? Don't look at injury as a negative. What's our opportunity? And we try and make it
so
all
runners are terrible though, Kenny, for
many levels.
Yeah. But we're awful for keeping on running, even though we are trying to run through injury, or trying to, you know, we cut back a bit, but as long as we can still get out. So I suppose the question I'm trying to ask is are there types of injuries where we don't have to stop running and we can run to a certain level of discomfort, and as long as we don't go above that, it's okay? Is that, what would you say to that?
Yeah, so I think if every runner that felt a niggle or was injured came to see me, then like they'd be queued out the door, you know, to be around the street, because not every runner who is injured or gets a niggle has to come see physio by any stretch of the imagination. And I think the sort of the way I look at this is a really lovely bit by a piece done by a guy called Christian Barton, who's an Australian physio who does a lot of work in running. And he has what's called the risk framework, so RISK. And basically with sort of ongoing background running injuries, we would tend to go with, so risk basically stands for reduced speed, or sort of reduce overall load. So the amount that you're doing in some form, doesn't mean you have to then take all of it out, but you might just change the speed you're doing. You might change the volume down a little bit and just dial them in a little bit off the same of it. I in the risk then stands for sort of improved capacity to sort of deal with load. So that's where the strength work might come in, as we say, okay, right, well, we're going to keep you running, but let's maybe then think about increasing your strength work if you are going to bring a few sessions down in terms of running work, and say, okay, we're not going to do as much hill sessions this week or speed sessions. I'll replace that with my strength work on my bike. So we're still on our feet and doing something. Then we get into S, and that's then shifting loads. And shifting loads might look at changing the way you run. So increasing our cadence, maybe increasing our step rate. And that might shift the force away from a tissue a little bit for a block of time. And then K in the risk is keep adapting. So that adaptation would be let's find other ways to keep you going while we are still doing some bits of running. So like adapt other systems as best we can. So we tend to work on that basis, as like people can use that and think about, can I keep running in the basis of that if I try those different steps as well? we tend to very often think about, are symptoms stable? So if you're running and I'm getting a little bit of a niggle, but the day after doing that run, that symptom still feels sort of similar, and then the next day it still feels sort of similar. Well, you know what? That's a pretty stable symptom. If your mindset, and in the world of sort of predictive coding, which is that sort of mindset world that we look at with injuries, we sort of say, well, what's your mindset with this? How do you feel about it? Does it worry you? Do you feel quite safe? Yeah, I feel pretty safe with this. I recognize this. I've had this before. All right, well, then let's just reduce it for a little bit, put a couple of exercises in, and you can keep running quite happily because this stable, this symptom is very, very stable. Your level of irritability doesn't last like twice as long as the run did. So if you run 40 minutes and you're sore for 120 minutes afterwards, like, well, this seems to be, the balance here is slightly off for our liking. Or if you run one day and you're sore for 3 days, you're like, again, that's not going to be a great balance overall. So really, I think if you feel your symptoms are quite comfortable, they're quite stable, they're not shifting either way, then you probably are reasonably safe to keep ticking over. But if we use that sort of risk anagram of like, can I reduce something out of it? See if that brings it down, makes it more controllable. Or actually, do I need to improve my capacity? Do I need to do some strength work? Go and see physio for some focused work to see just actually, let's just make this a bit stronger. See if that brings your symptoms down. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. And I think there's a couple of things there. And some of the athletes I coach that are kind of high class, middle distance runners, who have been injured, we still are doing things like elliptical or bike to offload. You know, they're putting in high quality track work, but and they're okay. But at the same time, we're trying hard not to kind of load on recovery days with anything other than, you know, aerobic work that is this time off feet. And I think that's been really useful. So not number one. Number two is, you know, the other things that are being said more recently is that you can't just be a runner and run. You really have to strength train now, and strength training should be a regular, you know, twice weekly decent sessions should be a core part of your running training. What are your thoughts on that?
So, no, absolutely. I mean, I'm a big advocate of strength training, obviously. But part of that, I think also, again, when we think of my job as a physio, is this, what global health looks like. So even if we just use sort of the chief medical officer, would say that the base standard for the general population should be 2 sessions of strength training a week.
Yeah.
So if we're saying the general population, keep healthy, should do 2 strength sessions a week. Yeah. And you've got runners looking at you as if you've got a second head when you say, what do you reckon to maybe throw in 1 cheeky wee exercise in? They're like, why would I do such a thing? You think, well, generally, because we reckon that's a pretty decent idea for you overall. I mean, we very much look at strength training and where does that sit? And again, we can go across a spectrum with this. So we can talk about, what type of runner are they? So what strength work I might do, say, with an ultra runner may vary then depending upon what I might do with a trail runner, what I might do with a mountain runner, what I may do with a track runner. So strength and conditioning, we very often want to think and target, again, meet the patient where they are. Like, because if that's what they do, they're going to get a far better understanding of, this is why we're doing this exercise, because I can apply it to the type of running they do. If I've got a track runner and I'm trying to give them, I don't know, huge amounts of step up type work, they may look at me and go, I don't really get why I'm doing this. This looks nothing like the running I want to do. So we may try and target S&C work. But again, I think you and Rory touched upon it. You know, I mean, the science would be pretty solid now on saying, what does strength training give a runner? Well, it appears to give us pretty decent injury prevention, you know, from most of what the numbers come out from. It does seem to improve running economy. It doesn't seem to have a huge effect on sort of VO2 and a number of other things, but undoubtedly we do see performance benefits off the back of it.
Yeah.
And I think anecdotally, runners will tell you once you get buy-in, once they get 6, 12, 18 weeks into some sort of conditioning program, they will undoubtedly feel the benefits of doing it. So within the clinic, we do a huge amount of, you know, advocating for some semblance of strength work where we can get it. But we also, again, and that's one of the reasons I like, I've always, not always stayed in private practice, one of the reasons I love it, I love being in private practice, is that like, that strength and conditioning is going to look so different for somebody who's just coming off the street, who's got three kids, a job, you know, a husband, a wife, a home. And it's like, well, you know, they know they should do it, but how do we find ways then, you know, to fit it into their world? Mm. Ultra runners by animals do things that are long, submaximal. They don't really push themselves, like, you know, particularly maximally within most of the running sessions in a week. And you're about to tell them, I want to go and do some maximal based exercise that's really short in duration. And also, you're now going to be in a contained environment where they go, well, I don't want to be in a contained environment. I want to be outside, miles away from my three kids, my wife and my husband, and then the job. And so everything about it from a mental standpoint is just so fundamentally against sometimes what they feel fits their need.
Yeah.
That, again, the key comes down to, what are we going to program? How do we get it done? And how is it going to fit into your life, basically? Now, some will buy in straight away. Sometimes, again, ultra runners, especially marathon runners, they love data. So one of the nice things we can do sometimes here in the clinic is we have all the testing equipment. We're very lucky to have the force plates. We're very lucky to have dynamometers, strain dynamometers, all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff here, where we can give them the numbers. And that very often can be what they want to get buy-in for.
Yeah.
And sometimes they don't even have to come here and do it. I can say to somebody, right, you know what, let's go and do a broad jump. You stand at that line, do a broad jump for me. How far did you jump? Right, if I give you 8 weeks of strength training, you can do this in the house, go and jump again. Can you jump farther? Yeah, well, then you're probably a bit stronger. Can you do a counter movement jump? Can you stand, bit of sellotape in your hand, stick it against the wall, then go and put another bit of sellotape in your hand, jump up against the wall, stick that next bit of tape, measure how high you jumped. Right, let's go away and do 12 weeks and see if you can make that better. They're more likely to do that because in the first 12 weeks they might think, I don't think I'm any different running. But turns out, actually, I'm jumping higher or I'm jumping further. And so these little self-tests for, you know, the general populace, or maybe do a calf raise to failure, do a bridge, you know, a single leg bridge, something where they can go, all right, I can see that there is an impact here, even if I don't necessarily feel it on my running. And so we'd say, look, that's how we get buy-in for S&C. We give them tangible things that they can start to, you know, do quite easily. We talk a lot about micro-dosing S&C. Like, so again, this idea of saying, right, you know what, go off and spend 45 minutes on your own in your garage trying to lift weights. But actually, I might say, look, see when you're at work, if you've got stairs in your work, like, don't climb every first stair, climb every second stair. And then start, that's some nice S&C. See, when you're walking around the office, walk around on your toes. Yeah, do some little bunny hops as you're going between places. Put little bits of S&C into your life that just start to fit into how you want to do things. Yeah, if you like that peace and quiet of going out for the run, then don't try and do your exercises in the living room with the kids and, you know, other things going on with the dog running around, because that's not where you live in your head when you want to do exercise. Take yourself off, go and do it, make it a focused effort or a focused block. And I think you'll find that people are much more likely in the recreational running population, they're going to do it. They're going to find it easier.
Kyle, you're smiling away there in the background. What's going on?
Do you know what? See, after a couple of weeks ago, I did actually do some microdosing of S&C, and I was quite proud of that. But I actually did involve the kids. I got Lenny, he's like a two-year-old, got him like that, because he loves to be lifted up. Just did like a front squat, and what, you know, it was pretty hard. Like, you know, I used to be able to do that in my sleep. These days, you know, 10 reps of that, like, that's two or three sets. I was a mess by the end of it. The next section is they've got like the bed, the height of the bed's actually perfect for Bulgarian split squats. So like, I was doing some of that as well, you know, 10 of them. And then we've got like this sort of like rocking chair thing. So I was doing my bridges on that, you know, an unstable surface. My arse was red raw by the, you know, the couple of days later. I still feel it now. And, you know, I was like, because I couldn't run really because I wasn't feeling great last week. So I was like, well, I'll just do all this stuff. That'll make me feel good, you know. It did inspire me, you know, just speaking to Rory and just some of those little things that you can include. And And I'm not saying I feel it now, because I've only done it two or three times now, you know. But I think that's one thing listeners or runners want, is they want it now, you know. They want to see the benefit straight away. But actually, you might not see a benefit. You might just not get injured. Yeah. Or you might actually just, at some point, it'll just, when you look back or reflect back on how it was, you think, hold on, I do feel better, you know, I do feel stronger. And for me, and probably Tom as well, we're at that ripe young age of our sort of late 30s, and, you know, going into masters next year, we want to be, you know, that sort of swear word, you know, what is it, the a year, every year you lose how much muscle mass, or do you 1%. Just lose it 1%? So for me, that's quite scary, not just from a running perspective, but from a health perspective. Like that's just anyone. That's not just the running population.
When we start talking about super and we talk about microdosing, like we want to also be impactful with microdosing. So we very often want to say, okay, what muscle groups do we want to hit here? Mm. So we can come up with the sort of three muscle groups we want to hit, and we can target them, then we're probably in a good place. You know, when we think about runners, you know, about 60% of your, when you go for a preferred running pace, so if you guys go out and you run the pace, you're like, this is my comfy pace, I like this pace, chances are 60% of that work's coming off your calf. Chances are about 30% is going to be coming off your lateral, your outside hip, and then maybe the last 10% or somewhere in those percentages is going to be your quads. So if we're going to say, let's microdose things, but let's microdose it after our big hitters, our big muscle groups, which are really going to be our big force producers that are going to keep me running, that are going to keep me ticking over. And if we can get it, because most people come in here and go, I've got, you know, a little bit of a running injury, and they're mostly getting it on their easy runs, I'm going to probably hedge my bets that there's something wrong with one of those three muscles. Yeah, if I'm going to be trying to cut my time down, and there's something wrong in one of those three areas, and that's why you're getting it. So if it's kneecap pain, probably going to take a pretty decent guess at your quads or your hip isn't doing its job. If you're getting plantar fascia or Achilles pain, probably going to take a pop in the dark and say it's your calf in some form. So if we've got three muscle groups that are doing the majority of your work on your easy pacing, then I'm going to say, right, let's microdose some S&C after those three, because I'm probably going to get bang for buck. And I think you spoke to Rory last time, it's like, oh, what kind of kit? I mean, most people have stairs. If they haven't got stairs in the house, they've got it in their stairwell going up to their flat, they've got it in their office. And I can make people's lives murder and hellish with one set of stairs, because one week you can just be doing some nice step-ups on the bottom step. See, next week, go on to the second step. See, after you've done that, don't take a rest. Get your feet on the edge of the step. Let's do some calf raising. Once you've done your calf raising, now let's go side step up onto the step. So now we're going to work your outside hip. Maybe I could get you stepping down off the first step 1 week, and then I'm going to get you trying to step down off the second step in 2 weeks' time. So, and then next thing you know, you've got your kids on your back, just as you're doing, Kyle. So, you know, sort of pressing them over your head as you're going up and down. Or we're getting a backpack that sits next to the stairs. And you're just simply microdosing S&Cs. You're going up and down the stairs to put the washing away, to do any of these type of things. But the impact on those three muscle groups, especially if you don't do anything, is profound. The science doesn't lie. If you do nothing and you start doing something, you're going to get huge gains comparison to somebody who does bits and pieces and is doing wee bits more. It's the people who are doing nothing who then gain the most, undoubtedly.
Yeah.
So and Tom.
I was going to say, so what would your advice be? Say there's someone listening to this thinking that they're not injured, but they're thinking, you know, I can see the performance gains. And I know myself, my best times have come when I was doing strength and conditioning through the block. And yeah, I didn't get injured, so I made the race, but I've got no doubt in my mind I was running stronger, I was running taller, I just felt better. So say the average runner, they're listening to this thinking, right, this sounds great. What would your advice to be them to be? To go and see a physio and say they need a plan, or how would you advise them to approach that?
I mean, I'm never going to tell people not to go and see physios, because, you know, we all have mortgages to pay. But generally across the board, I think it depends on, I think it comes back to where are you and what do you want to get out of your running to some extent. So if we're saying, well, I think I want to try and I'm going to take up running, I'm going to do more, I've got my season ahead, then seeing someone for an idea of like, where am I at this point in my season? Where am I in my strength profile at this point? Against, like, I've never run before, so I just want some gentle advice on some injury prevention generally across the board. But more often than not, you want to make sure that the advice you're going to get is good, honest advice, and that you're going to get an idea of who you are as an individual and not just a sort of piece of paper that just has random exercises on it, to be honest. And so if you're going to go and get it, you really want to have a good, decent, worth assessment to say, what are those three muscle groups that we just talked about? Like, more often than not, in a recreational runner, and a hill runner who wants to go up and do lots of mountains, we might want to look at some hamstring strength, because they're going to have to be a lot of glutes and hamstrings involved in this type of work. So it probably depends on what type of running you're doing. But generally, I would say is you can self-test more often than not. I mean, you're literally just going to do a right-to-left comparison. If you can do 25 bridges on your right leg, you know, on your second step, you lie on the forefoot, but your heel on the second step, you can do 25 on the right, and you can do 12 on the left. You don't need me to tell you that your left is not doing hee-haw. If you go and do your calf raises, and you can do 30 on your right, and you do, you know, 15 on your left, again, you don't really need me to tell you there's a discrepancy there. And then very often what I also say to runners is that I say, like, you go for your run, like, and see when you come in, go and redo those tests for me. And if the right's still banging out 20 and your left's now banging out 2 or it's sore, again, you don't really need me to tell me where the problem was. Like, you know, test after you've run, because that's when you're fatigued. That's when you're going to find out what is now no longer performing or gave up the ghost halfway through your run, basically. So, you know, simple maximum tests work quite nicely. As I say, that single leg hop for distance or a bound for difference, or, you know, do that with the kids. Go and stand in a line and see who can jump the furthest on one leg. If you can jump a meter on your right and hardly any distance on your left, or the way you do it looks bananas on the left-hand side, then again, you probably don't really need me to tell you that that's probably something you need to think about working on. Yeah. And the last thing I'd say, and people always sort of, you know, don't like it when I do this to them when they come in the clinic, is also sometimes just look at muscle bulk. So I'll sometimes look at people's calves, and, you know, especially calves and runners, and take a look at it or measure it and go, you've got 2 centimeter difference in the size of your calves left to right. And they go, yeah, I've had 3 ankle sprains in this left-hand side. Or actually, I had an Achilles problem. You're like, well, you're probably likely to get another one here because there's a difference here. So even just simple observation, you know, of looking at differences, maybe the way you move when you do an exercise against another, that maybe saves you a lot of money in terms of going to see physio, because you're like, maybe if I just give this a crack for 12 weeks, then maybe actually that ache and pain goes away. But like we talked about with the risk, you know, the risk analogy, you know, and just increase the ability to attenuate load or increase your ability to deal with load.
Yeah. I think it's interesting that you're saying that, particularly for that kind of the calf complex, your gastrocnemius, your soleus, because, you know, I mean, the soleus takes about 7 times body weight was what I was reading. You know, it's the muscle. It's a small muscle, but it's got the biggest bang for buck in the body, and it takes about 7 times body weight, way more than your quads or your hamstrings take. And it's happening all the time. And I don't think people appreciate just how that, and you know, and you're not a triple jumper. If you're a triple jumper, you're about 15 times body weight. But I think ordinary runners don't recognize that ordinary running puts that amount of body pressure through your lower limb, and you know, so this stuff around how good your calf muscle is, I think, are really important. Well, it's not only how good is your calf muscle, but what the hell are you doing about it in terms of keeping it strong? I think that's probably a really important message to come out of this.
I mean, if we just look at pure numbers, so, as you said, again, sort of like, you know, 3 meters per second type running, your calf's going to do about 6 times body weight. And that's exponentially going to just rise to 6 to 7 to 8 to 9 times as you start to move faster across the floor. So if your training block has mostly been these slow, easy runs, and all of a sudden, like, now I'm going to do some threshold work or some interval work, that calf demand is going to go up quite dramatically. Yeah. Now, if you're not prepared for that, you're going to potentially run into problems. Now, what we'll also see is that, like, if we're saying that that takes, you know, 6, 7, 8 times body weight with running, now when you're walking, it's probably taking 2, 2.5, 3, just over 3 times body weight. People then go, well, I'm doing my calf raises. But your calf raise off the floor, going up and down is also only giving you 2.5 to 3 times body weight. So in theory, walking is just doing as much for your calf as doing your standing single leg calf raise. So if you're like, well, I'm doing my single leg calf raise, I'm like, great, but just go for a walk and you're going to get the same anyway. Now, so the idea here being is that, well, we're going to have to make that calf raise harder. So if you can do 15, brilliant. I mean, that's great. I'm chuffed a bit. So you can do 15. But see, after about a week and a half, going to add some weight to it for me and going to make it a bit harder, because that's how your cells will adapt. Your cells will overload. You'll compensate. So again, use the same. And I think that's where you get good buy-in from athletes if you speak the same language as them. So use parlance. You talk about supercompensation. Talk about overload. Talk about specificity. You know, specificity? Yeah, close enough.
Yeah, that was okay.
And, you know, we might say, like, let's put a bit more weight on this next week and then a bit more a week after that. And so you're just trying to find ways to make it a little bit tougher. Go from the floor. Next week, go from a step or the off the edge of a step for me. Just start to ask that a bit more, because the numbers don't lie. If your walking is producing 2, 2.5, 3 times body weight and your calf raise off the floor is doing the same, then it's not really going to give you that real change. It might if you've never done them before. But if you're a remotely good athlete, you know, and you're pushing in to that next level up, it's not going to cut it. And that person in the start line next to you who is doing it, I'm guaranteed they're applying more power into more force into the floor than you are, which is going to move them quicker, and they're probably going to shift quicker than you, and they're going to recover quicker than you. So that next race next week, they're going to be, you know, ready to go, and you're going to be toiling along with tight, sore, stiff calves.
Well, this is like a
motivational chat for us endurance runners to strength trainer. You're going to be struggling to move by the time you get to mile five for me, probably out of a 50-mile race. So just on that note as well, I found one thing I've noticed a lot is just waking up in the morning, going out for a run, just feeling like my form's just not what it used to be. And when I was running really quick, well, for me anyway, PBs and stuff, I always felt like, I always reflect back and think I was a lot more, I did feel a lot lighter maybe, just a lot bouncier on my feet, probably a bit more power, better form. I go out now, I'm like a bag of tatties, you know, just running along the trail. You know, mistaken the farmer's like, what's the bag of tatties doing in the woods there? No, it's just Kyle running again, you know. But anyway, where was I going with this? What I'm trying to say is, for someone like me who's maybe lost their way slightly, is there, without knowing a huge amount, is there light at the end of the tunnel? If I was to say, right, there probably is an element of strength work that I've lacked, because everything's starting to feel weaker. I wake up in the morning, even the last week or last couple of weeks, I go out just walking, or I've gone out for that run I did a couple of days ago just as a test run, and my calf was sore, and my Achilles was a bit achy. You know, it just seems to be more things are starting to creep in now than they used to be. And you know, I'm just thinking, I never really did that much strength training, like when I was getting PBs and things. But now I don't know if I can get away with it. And I'm sure maybe other listeners are thinking the same thing, because there is runners out there. And I don't think there's some runners who are at the top of the game who don't do a huge amount of strength training in endurance sports.
Well, they do it in different ways though, Kyle, I think. I mean, there's a big poncho for top class runners to be sprinting uphill, you know, 5 seconds sprinting uphill. Yeah. With a decent recovery, doing half a dozen of them, and they're, you know, that's like doing dynamic squats in some respects, but yeah. When you're doing it that way, and I think that's always one of the things that I was going to say, that even if you don't like doing the weights, that's fine. How can you get another stimulus? And certainly once a week, doing some hill sprints, then just short hill sprints, but with a long recovery. And but making sure you're going fast, but, you know, without being stupid about it. You don't want to go careering into this, you know, tomorrow. You want to build into it. But that in itself is really good for building strength and also preventing injury.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, that's something that I certainly did. But yeah, there's.
Well, I used to prescribe it for you, you know, a while back, Kyle.
I did it.
And you did, yeah.
I've got a question for you, Kenny, which is a little bit on a slightly different tangent, but it's something that I'm really keen to get your take on. You mentioned a bit about it. How are you using data today? In a world where everyone is so full of data, and runners today have got it coming out of their ears, it's ridiculous. And is there anything, how are you, got from your profession, how is data being used today? Either you mentioned Strava slightly jokingly, but generally, how is data being used?
So I think in the terms of sort of performance physiotherapy, which is what we probably try to do here, is it we use data really to try and get initially, we'll go with the baseline idea. So we'll look to try and get baseline strength. So we would look and say, if at the start of a training block or at the start of a plan for a race, we want to get an idea where you stand just now in terms of strength output more often than not. So we may look, and we run sessions like this, and we have a session that we do with runners where we'll look and say, okay, let's pick some of these major muscle groups. So we might say to you, again, let's look at these quads, this hip and this calf, and just use those three and simply look to try and get an idea of how much force can you produce over, say, 5 seconds against how much force can you produce instantaneously to some extent. Mm-hmm. And that will give me, you and I, an idea of, do we think there's asymmetries here, or just generally, what are your baseline strength numbers? And then we can try and use sort of norms and say, well, how close is that to you, to your age group? You know, to your sort of a male of a certain size or a certain age, or a female of a certain age or a certain size or type of runner. The problem is that those norms aren't brilliant. They're a bit messy. Most studies, unfortunately, are massively underreport on women. They're just not represented in sports science or sports physio particularly well. And they're mostly just done on university-aged men because they're the only people who volunteer to go and do studies. So we've got huge amounts of data on that population. But basically, those numbers will then give us a baseline to say, right, that's where you are just now. So what we're going to want to then track, and it depends again on the person, to say, right, let's go and do your 4 weeks. And we can simply come back and look at those numbers and say, are we seeing a drop off in those, or are we seeing those starting to creep up a little bit too? And so that will then give me an idea of, right, well, you're seeing sort of improvements in where we are. If we then go through this, we get into week 8, week 10, week 12, and Lewis is killing them, you know, with volume and speed, and those strength numbers are falling off the edge of a cliff, then we're starting to say, look, there's fatigue in the system here. This is fatigue that's not now clearing to some extent. Mm-hmm. Now, this is, again, where it comes to that importance of having that relationship with athletes. And that's what we've tried to do here, is get an idea that actually, is Kyle just not sleeping very well? Like, you know, is that, that's actually why his numbers are down this week, rather than actually, is it, you know, Lewis is running him into the ground. So we'll give us some nice baseline numbers. But then if we start to get into the world of strength conditioning, again, people like numbers would say, okay, this is where your strength is now in this calf test, and just this sort of isometric in a force plate or a dynamometer. Here's your calf exercises. Let's come back and test that, and let's see if my intervention has been useful. Because I might come back and I'm no stronger. I'm like, well, I'm terrible at prescribing exercise. So we need to change your prescription. We need to make a better impact upon that too. So if we found areas, we can then go back and make sure that we are seeing that difference. And what I'm giving you is being useful, rather than we are just guessing. And Kyle sort of like, I'm just doing it, but I don't really know if I'm getting any better. And it's like, well, I can show you you're getting better, because actually the numbers won't really lie to us on that basis too.
And so, you're telling me that, aren't you? We've got a mutual athlete recently with a calf injury. You've been sending me details of the calf testing and how that has improved markedly over a period of 2 to 3 weeks. And yet, but we're not stopping. You know, we're actually programming in it's not higher volume. It's higher loads to get even stronger. But it's heading in the right direction. And those numbers have been very good for giving us confidence about being able to take that athlete's to improve the running of that athlete, as well as, you know, so we're doing a lot of cross training, we can back off on the cross training and get a bit more running in now as well. So it's the data, I think, Tom, is really, really important when it comes to, you know, particularly if you're looking down the line to get a quality performance and you're putting a lot of, you know, a lot of effort into it, a lot of motivation, and you know this is your essence of who you are and what you want to do, that data feedback is really, really important.
That's interesting. Very interesting.
So, hey, Kenny, Project Physio, right? That's the name of your company, isn't it?
Yeah.
And so how do you know, if anyone wanted to kind of be seen by you or get some specific advice or come and see you, how would they go about doing that?
So in essence, all the information about the clinic is online, so they can just literally head to our website, and we're off, you know, which is just projectphysio.net, and then we're also on a lot of the social media side of things as well. We do have, so within the business, we have different projects as such. You see what we did there with the name, and so we've got Project Run, and so Project Run really is our sort of program, which then is our support program for athletes. So within that program, that is where a lot of our national, international level athletes will sit. So we have then a support program which those athletes can access, where again they get to come see me, they get reduced cost to see us here, but then they also get the chance to do the testing, you know, again at reduced cost, and then they also get that ability to come in and actually sort of build that relationship through that process too. So if runners are of a national, international, or even very good club level runner, you know, we again are happy to have those chats with people as well, and then we can support them via that. We've got a number of runners, we're quite lucky, a number of runners travel from all Europe as well as all of the UK to come see us, and then we can very often see them in person once, get a sense of who they are, and then catch them up online, and so we then can just do virtual appointments, and so we can check in how everything's going, how your exercise is going, and then 6 months later bring them back in and just do some testing again. So they're getting that sort of, still building that relationship from a distance, but you're still keeping, you know, a sort of a touch base with them as well. We're quite lucky that we also support a number of international athletes who run out in America, so out in the universities, out in the States. So we've got a number of athletes from out there. So we'll support them from a distance as well with advice or sort of S&C input as well, depending on what they've got available at their universities. So Project Run gives us that ability to sort of really focus in on that running group to some extent. And so people can come do the run sessions with us here. We've just started a new advanced session where we use a guy called Matt Holland, who's improved my running, and he does a lot of videoing of running technique, and then we'll do the strength work alongside. So we've got quite a few nice projects that people can get, you know, come in and actually go through all the different testing again, depending on what they want to do it for. And then a lot of those athletes, like say, will come in and use it every 3 months, 6 months, maybe 8 months down the line as well. So runners can come and see us for those sort of bits and pieces as well. We've got Project Performance, which does a bit more in-depth sort of strength work for the triathletes group. So we support a number of triathlon clubs. We've got Edinburgh Triworks have just come on board as a club that we support. We have Harmony, who are a club that we support. And so with those athletes or those clubs, we'll input into their coaches. So they'll be able to ask questions, and we have this relationship of, you know, doing some education with them and education with their athletes alongside that too. So we've really opened up to sort of helping the wider world of athletics as well at the club level by having them come on, and we have a project club that clubs can approach us, and we can, you know, work out how we bring that in, whether that's bringing five or six athletes in to do some testing, whether that's again being able to do education evenings as well. So, and we've got a few clubs we're in negotiations with just now to try and get them on board as well, and same on the cycling side. So for the triathlon, we do some cycling specific testing. We work closely with Edinburgh Bike Fitting down Dougie down there, and we do a lot of joint sessions with the triathletes to try and improve that. So some really nice, bringing in lots of good relationships, bringing in like experts from outside to do that as well,
yeah.
And then sort of combining that with, well, how many years of, you know, elite level of knowledge of sport, and then also sort of cutting edge stuff as well. So we do some interesting stuff and quite enjoyable stuff, and like I say, we're nice based in the sort of the city centre west end of Edinburgh, all very close to Haymarket, 5 minute walk from Haymarket, and tram stops and buses and all sorts.
So if Joe Average Runner wants to come and see you, he's got a couple of options, or he or she's got a couple of options, haven't they? Yeah. And all, both of which can be booked online. So you can book online to actually come and see you personally, you know, in your clinic in Edinburgh. But you would also do, you can also do online consultations. So folk don't necessarily have to travel, and particularly if they're looking for advice, or they've maybe had an assessment and it's a follow-up. So that's just all online, and it's all, you just go into Project Physio.
And you can just go and have a nosy around and have a look at the different, and again, you can go on to the different projects and they'll give you a rundown of the athletes we support, you know, what the project run sessions look like. So yeah, if you're injured, you can come and we can just do a standard session and work on injuries. If you want to just get an idea of what your baselines are, what your progress looks like, or get a strength and condition. And one of the things we do here, which again, which we started talking about with Rory, is that the clinic has we've got a big power rack, we've got an isometric rack, we've got a Smith machine. We've spent a lot of money on some high-end gym equipment, because very often runners will go, I go into the gym, I have no idea what I'm doing. So very often we'll spend a session in here going, right, this is what a gym would look like. These are the four exercises you're going to do. This is how you'd set them up. This is how you're going to set it up in the rack. This is the weight you might want to use. And we literally will almost walk them by the hand through what a gym session for them will look like, so they can walk into the gym with confidence and not walk in and go, I have no idea what I'm doing here, I am out my depth, basically.
That's important though, honestly. Years ago I've been that guy going to a gym and thinking, hey, I'm a skinny link runner and all these guys are big boys about to throw serious weights, and am I really allowed to just pick up the bar with nothing on it? Like, seriously, like, that's sort of like, I think not knowing what you're doing is such an intimidating thing. I think that's really good.
So true. I'm seeing, again, I'd say we're seeing more and more of that now, where I'm getting runners coming in and saying, right, what I want to do some testing, I want to get a strength program. And so we'll then say, right, what type of runner are you? What, you know, what's your background, so on and so forth. But we literally will walk through, here's your exercises, we'll video them, we'll go through the cueing of them, which I think is a massive part of runners, is how do you cue exercise? Like, what direction do you want them to move in? How far should they be moving? Where should they feel it? And so again, we really get an idea of that nitty gritty of what does it feel like to do this exercise? What does it feel like to push maximally? What does it feel like to brace? Then we'll write it on the board, take videos of it and walk it through, so runners can walk away and be like, I'm happy that I could walk into a gym right now, or I go home, do this well, do it successfully, and I've actually then can go back in 6-8 weeks and you and I can run through it and go, well, let's see if you're any better at it. And, you know, we can go back through the slow motion video, we can go back through the gym program and do it as well. And then what we're hoping to do, not to do a selling job, but in the next week or 2 weeks, is actually, I only work 4 days a week because I'm pretty lazy that front. So like, they've got the sports masseuse is in here, but she's also a gym instructor. So we're actually going to hopefully be able to open the clinic up where then runners could come in and be in a very safe environment where they know and they recognize, and they could come and do their S&C in here.
Cool.
using all, like, the, you know, again, the sort of the cutting edge stuff that we've got, the flywheels, the power rack, the Smith machine and everything. So that actually, again, they get a safe environment where they feel quite supported, they recognize it, and they can run through that as well. So it's just trying That's to create a place that, like, runners can really see benefits of, and come to places where, you know, last week, 3 international athletes were in, and they're like, oh, this thing's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's
very cool.
Well, hey, Kenny, we've had you in for over an hour, and we do realise you had a wee bit of a snack before you came on, but you probably are still starving and need to get your tea. You know, there's been a lot of fantastic stuff that we've spoken about, lots of great takeaways, you know, and particularly just very sensible, easy things that people can do without having to get too technical. So that's been brilliant. I think that there's an awful lot more that we can chat about. So we're going to ask you up front, are you up for coming back on another show in the near future, and perhaps you and Rory do a joint one for us?
Yeah, no, I would love to do that. I mean, Rory and I listened to Rory's, and the funny thing with the Rory one was that Rory mentioned about, you know, you thought about being a physio, and it was myself they came and had that discussion with. They came into the clinic and he's like, I think I'm doing physio, and I was like, I don't think you're smart enough to be a physio, Rory, just go and do your hands and see. And so, I didn't say that, I really didn't, but he did. Right. So yes, no, Rory and I work really quite nicely together. We've seen a lot. I mean, I used to treat Rory, so Rory was one of my patients for years. So yes, and again, we can talk a lot about, you know, I'm more than happy to come on, look at specific running types or biomechanics. We could have a little look at, you know, ultra runners against track runners and so on and so forth. Yeah, more than happy to come back on.
Well, Well, that's great. And we'll be knocking at your door. So thanks very much, Kenny. And we'll say goodbye for just now.
Kenny. Super interesting.
Yeah. Great
thanks,
stuff.
Kenny, for that. That was brilliant. Thank you.
No worries at all.
Cheers. Speak soon. Okay. Bye.
See you later. Cheers.
Hey,
so Kenny, that was brilliant. So yeah, I mean, some amazing stuff in there. And you know, anyone who, I mean, most runners have can relate to some, almost all or some of those things that we were just chatting about there. I mean, it's running's a risky sport, but it's also a sport where you can, you know, take so much from as well. But it can also take away a lot from me as well. And there's probably a lot of people who are listening going, I'm injured and I have been for a while, but just hang in there, you know, just have a listen, you know, dissect some of what he said. And if you need to, go and see someone about your injuries. Try not to just run it off, you know, or sometimes you can. Maybe the physio will tell you to do that. So, yeah, good stuff. Brilliant. Great. So before we go, I realise we've been on the go for a while now. 9:10 is the time I go to bed, and it's now 11 minutes past.
We only have one important thing to talk about, but it is a very important thing to talk about.
We know what that's going to be.
We know.
It's got to be Megan's 10K. I mean, Lewis, you kind of called it. You kind of called that sort of time she was going to run out. And, you know, I had absolute belief. You know, she's a European champion. Arguably, she would have the cross country champion. You know, arguably, she was in that senior race. She would have destroyed that field too. But here she is running Olympic qualifying time for the 10,000 meters. Like, I mean, yeah, it's just amazing the fact that she's fourth quickest in the UK. You know, she's a northern girl. Like, she's from my birth town, Inverness. This is just, it's amazing. Like, you know, she's a TRS run of the year, of course, or was. Paul Forbes got that range. Yeah. I don't think she'd be too caught up in that, to be honest. But, I mean, wow. Just wow. 30:36, was it, she ran?
Yeah, 30:36. And a great performance. I mean, she was in Valencia in January, did 31:20 on the roads. And ran a lot of that, ran about 5k that race on her own. So I think Ross Kearns, our coach, knew that there was a bit more there. But seriously, Ross has been reporting these last few weeks just about how well our training has been going. And, you know, when athletes are setting personal bests in sessions without killing it, you know, and that's the key, you know, it's hard training, but it's not eyeballs out because you have to be able to recover. And if you're setting PBs in sessions, the writing was on the wall that it was gonna be close. So absolutely fantastic that she's done it. Generational talent in my view, and more to come. You know, the second 5K was about, she ran about 15:10 for that, so it was like 15:25 and 15:10. For the splits. So that's pretty decent. So hats off, and I have been communicating with Ross tonight and really to try to get both of them on the show. So Megan's still out in America, and she'll be out there for a few more days yet, but we're hoping to tee up some time either next week or early the week after to get both of them on the show and have a chat around the performance or training, get a coach's view, get Megan's view, and take it from there. Fantastic. Wow.
That'd be class. That'd be absolutely class.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, she's got the time. What happens now? You know, you get the time. What is the next step?
Well, like the same, there's still, I think there is a qualifying race, you know, the high field 10K, the night of the 10Ks.
Highgate, not Highfield, sorry.
So, yeah. Does she need to run it or no? Yeah. To be fair, though, I think Megan would probably be looking to run the 5K and get the 5K qualifying and the 10K. You know, it's great that she's got the 10K time. So that's kind of a banker for her. But ideally, I think she would probably want to go in the 5K and have a better opportunity in the 5K. Yeah. 10K is a long way. That was her debut. You know, it was a debut for her. I think she got the time, but it was a hard, you know, it's a hard race. Got to recover from it. Makes you think twice about doing another one. There's not an awful lot of 10Ks on the track. And that Sound 10K in America is one where, you know, people are now going to, you know, to get an early 10K to get a time in for selection, whether it's for Olympics, World Championships, etc. Because it's just not an opportunity to run them later on in the season. I think if to run an Olympic qualifying time at Highgate would be a pretty big shout, because nobody's run that fast female wise in Highgate. So
that's the Sound Running's where Ailish got her time, isn't it? So it's the cream of the crop that are in that race, and she was fourth in the race too, you know,
fourth in the race. American star Alicia Monson, who was looking to get the American record, she dropped out, you know. And Monson's a really, really strong runner, and it just shows you how far Megan has come in such a short period of time. And you know, and it's still an upward trajectory in my view. You know, this is not showing signs of leveling off as yet. She's in good hands with Ross, and you know, good nurturing relationship and coaching setup and support setup. That's the kind of thing you need to, you know, we're hearing from Kenny there about relationship, and relationship is absolutely vital in top class performance. And it's clearly there. So yeah, great stuff.
No, great stuff. And you know, there's been so much happening, it's hard to just put it all in one article or one podcast today. But
yeah,
there was the Scottish Half Marathon Championships that were held in Inverness, and you know, top headline results. I don't know if you were following it, Lewis, but
yeah,
we had John Bell taking the win, and Mary McLennan, you know, of Inverness Harriers, who, you know, both have been on the show. And John's a Inverclyde AC guy, an ambassador of Athletics Trust Scotland, and great to see him. You know, I know how hard he works as an athlete. Great to see them both of them taking the victories and some superb quick times as well. So
Mary also coached by Ross and looking to run our first London marathon.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. It was a record. Marriage. I think it was first a record time good. As well.
Sorry? It was a record. Yeah. She took down Natasha Phillips' time from last year.
Yeah. It was about 9 seconds, I think, something like that.
Yeah. No, really impressive. And actually, on Mary, I spoke to Mary a few times in the podcast, and I follow her on Strava, and it's interesting. She looks good at the moment. She looks like she's going well. So I think she can keep her head. It'd be interesting to see what she does in London.
Yeah. To be fair, I think that it's her first marathon.
Yeah.
And like many first marathons, you need to, you know, you need to just go through the steps and get the first one under your belt without being too gallus about it.
Exactly. I think, and I think she strikes me as a girl who can keep her head. So I think, fingers crossed. We've got a few weeks to chat about London. The other thing we were going to talk about tonight was there was the podium 5K of the weekend. Jake Whiteman, 1352.
Saw that, yeah.
Nice to see him running. The Hawkins brothers, that was quite interesting to see. It was first and foremost, great to see them back. See Callum back running. There was an interesting article over the weekend about his desire to keep going and desire to to run, you know, marathon at the top level again. Paris mentioned 15:13. So I don't know where he is on his block. I don't know, and we don't know how he executed that race. Maybe he was running in control, but I'd love to see Callum go again at the top level. It's just been and I feel for the guy. You know, I feel like he had that such a great run in, was it Doha, in the heat.
Yeah.
And and you think, he came back from the Gold Coast, went to Doha, ran spot, you know, sensational performance, fourth, missed the medal. In the heat, and you think, you know, ifs and buts and all that, and yeah, I just feel he deserves. I would love to see him have one more roll of the dice at that level, but it's just shows it's tough. It's tough. I'm not sure.
Then the events moved on as well.
It has moved on. UK, was it Phil Sessman and
yeah,
who's the other lad who's running well?
Emil Caress.
Yeah, I mean those two. It's tough. So I think it was a mixed one. It was cool to see them back, but yeah, also a bit of sadness that, you know, we're going to see those boys at the marathon again. I'm not sure at the top level. I mean,
yeah,
it's hard to know. I mean, you can come back quite quickly. I don't know, maybe you had an injury or a niggle or I don't know, a shoe fell off or something.
Callum's had significant injuries for a period of time. Yeah. So. And you know, it's the question, I suppose, that he and his team are looking at is whether the writing's on the wall or not. You know,
30. He's only 31. I mean, he's got years in front of him if he can get fit. But that's the challenge. I guess it's not as easy as
when you've been at the top level, when you've run a 2:08 marathon, when you've been at the top level, when you've been finished fourth in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the motivation to keep running if you're not at the high level is very different to kind of Joe Average runner who's plodding away, you know. So it'll be interesting to see. You know, it's nice to see them, you know, both boys back, because Derek ran 14 something or other, didn't he?
14:41.
Yeah. So that was good to see as well. So yeah. They're great for Scottish sport, and I do hope they keep running. But the demand of top class international marathons is such that it requires everything to go incredibly well, and you can't have any biomechanical or chronic injury defect dogging
that's
you.
That's me scooting.
So, well, you know. I can't actually say them on this podcast.
Kyle, I'm afraid, Kyle, I can say without any doubt you're not going to run 2:08 in London. So
proper sandbag in London, I was.
So so as we wrap up then, what is coming up the next few weeks? We're middle of end of March, we've got I mean, London's a month out. I'm racing this weekend. What else you got, Kyle? Lewis, you guys, is there anything on the broader scene? I feel like we're in that sort of lull after the cross-country season until things go again. The track's starting to come in a wee bit.
Well, is there not the Scottish National Road Relays this coming weekend?
There we go. Yes, it is indeed. Yeah. So good luck. We have no material to get impressed on that, but good luck to all club runners who's going down to do that. It's a great event. That very good event.
Yep. So London's probably the next big one in terms of my guys and girls, and you know, the indoor season's finished. We're in a kind of transition phase, building a bit more endurance before coming out in early May, hopefully to run some pretty reasonable times in May into June. So that's our target.
Nice.
Very good. Well,
very good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just running or trying to get back to it and enjoy it. The less said about my running at the moment, the better. But we'll get there though. One step at a time, eh? One step at a time.
Literally. Very good.
Oh boy. Well, I'm sure we missed a heap of things, but that was a great episode. And looking forward to just maybe reflecting back on, you know, what Kenny said, and And let's celebrate some more successes with our runners, you know, of all ages and abilities in the near future. I think the one other thing I was going to mention, the ACP is on this weekend. Is it this weekend?
Yes, it is.
As well?
Yes, it is.
So good luck to anyone taking part in
the Rico. Countries.
Well, and, Dougie Selman, I've got Dougie running there.
Yeah, so of course you do. See,
I'll actually be down at that.
Will you?
Oh, will you?
Good.
Yeah, 7 a.m. start. I'll be down.
Ocha. Oh, so, boy.
Good luck to everyone on the Scotland team, then. That's we're very...
And there's an open event, so anyone who has taken part, let us know, and we're looking forward to it. And get your shorts on if you need to. There is still a couple of pairs left, so if you do want to get your hands on the last few pairs, do let us know via our social media channels and or our Gmail account, tartanrunningshorts @gmail.com. But in the meantime, folks, thanks for a cracking episode, lads. And
Lewis, for getting hold of Mr. Watt. Great job.
No problem.
We'll catch you all later.
Cheers, guys.
See you later.
Cheers.
That's a wrap.